Hello folks, welcome back to another episode of Stoner, Frank and Free, a new Wieso production coming to you from Leipzig, Germany. And today I've got a subject I want to talk to you about, which is a European story, but as well it's history. We want to talk about medieval times, and I guess most people have a totally wrong idea about medieval times. Nowadays, when we talk about medieval times, we have all these cliches. Well, these are the dark ages. These were the ages when people were totally superstitious and were living sick and all this stuff. And it comes as if medieval times is becoming a synonym for these things. It's just a very negative view. And now we have the light ages, but this was dark. And well, if you get a closer look on medieval times, things look quite differently, and that's a very, very interesting stuff. It has to do with a wrong view of history, based, in my opinion, upon a wrong view of mankind, of a human being. And talking about medieval times is for me a very, very inspiring thing. Well, the first thing that hits you when we talk about medieval times, the first thing that you see is the traces that are still in our cities. Talking about Germany, Europe, and it's these great buildings that we still have from medieval times, and that's the way to get into this. And so this is the stuff that first jumps into mind, the Gothic cathedrals. This is from France. This is the Cathedrale de Chartres in France. And I bring this at the beginning because it's these French cathedrals that were built. They were all built at the same time, and this has to do with a female principle, a female principle of a worldview. All these French cathedrals, they have Madonnas, Marys. They are devoted to a female aspect of God. This is very interesting, and I say it right in the beginning, because we will come to this point. I think this is that the high medieval ages was a time in humanity where we had where we lived after the female principle, which is abundance, which is sharing, which is like the best symbol is the mother with the milky breast feeding the child. You know, this is abundance. This is nature. Nature is always in abundance, and this is what we had in this time. Well, if we look at these buildings, and I tell you, we could make a slideshow all day long just about these amazing buildings. There's hundreds of astounding buildings of medieval times, and this was something really new. It's called Gothic, and already the terminology is interesting. Gothic. This is a term. What is Gothic? It's the Goths. The Goths are some barbarians. You know, that's the way the Romans saw the Germanic people and all these tribes. They were telling this is Goths. And it's in architecture, when we speak about Gothic architecture, there you already see this some connotation that it's something barbarian, because in opposite the age before the architectonical age before was Romanic. Now Romanic, this is the Roman worldview, the Mediterranean worldview, and from their perspective, this change in architecture, which is also a change in culture and in lifestyle, they looked at this, this is Gothic. Yeah. But what we will see that this is a very, very special time of humanity, this Gothic times. Of course, we can get in lots of these buildings. I want to show you just one more, because as it happened to me just last summer, a few months ago, I visited this place. This is in Ulm, a city in the southwest of Germany, and this is the Ulmer Münster. Münster is another term for a great church, a cathedral, so to say. This is also from Gothic times, and I mean, what an amazing building. As a matter of fact, this is the highest church tower worldwide. And it was for a long time, it was the highest stone construction. Until then, in very modern times, skyscrapers started. But this is, I mean, even you can see it, it's an amazing feature. And I was there just a few months ago. You can still climb on the tower, and I did, I tell you, what a walk. But it's really great, because what we can see here, that in this Gothic times, you know, architecture and art as such is an expression of a mindset of people, isn't it? And what we can see here is, and even as a young student, I was astounded when I see this medieval stuff. This touches me, you know. And what kind of people were those who were building stuff like this with this enormous details and all the art? I must say that this building, it never got finished in medieval times. The top of the tower, as a matter of fact, the top was the construction finished in 19th century. So, as a matter of fact, this stuff is not medieval. But the plan, the entire construction was medieval. But these great times that I talk about, they came to a rather sudden end. And after this, there was many projects that were just not finished. Because from more or less from 1 year to the other, people ran out of energy. It was not possible to build stuff like that. And it took then centuries to finish the stuff. Very often you see great churches that, and if you have the eye, you can realize, wow, it was planned a different way, but then they just had to finish it. You couldn't build much more towers. Sometimes you have only one tower, while the plan was maybe four or stuff like that. Because then the energy was gone. But for 300 years, and this is what I'm talking about, a time span about 300 years, easily said, let's say between 1150 and 1450 AD. This time span, this is what we're going to focus on now. And in this time span, there was amazing pieces of architecture. What's also such a contrast to our modern mindset, our modern thinking, is when you're walking up there, when you're really on top, you see so many details, so many artistic features that you cannot even see from below, that were never meant to be seen from below. They were just an expression of the artist, the mason who was doing this stuff. They were doing it not for mundane reasons, not for worldly reasons, but they were doing it for God, for something higher. And you know, I'm a critic of these book religions, yeah, and of also of Christianity. But what I also see and always respect is when people have this mindset, a pious mindset, you know, something that is greater than only materialistic thinking, and this is what an expression of that. These people were doing the stuff not for just in a functional way, but for as an expression of the beauty of life, of the beauty of the creation, of God's creation, if you will. That was the mindset of the people. That was this building upwards, you know, building, bringing in light. This is an expression of the mindset of the people. That's what I see with medieval buildings. So, even when I was a young student and I studied at history also at university and archaeology and stuff, I wondered, wow, I mean, people who built that, were they really that medieval, superstitious people? I mean, because what does that tell you? I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but for me it was always, when I look at this, wow, I see this beauty. Of course, also, these are churches, and the other side is that these are also expressions of power. That's also true, and especially because I showed the Cathedral of Chartres. It's an amazing place. I mean, we can talk all evening about this. You know, only this building has so much to say, and there's so many stories behind that are amazing. And maybe at another time we're going to focus on them. The other thing is, I have always an ambivalent feeling when I approach these huge domes and cathedrals. on the one hand, I'm fascinated by the beauty and architecture, but on the other hand, you can feel the power as well. You know, the power of the Catholic Church. It's big at places like that, I tell you. I mean, this is powerful buildings. And actually, the location here in Chartres, it's true as in so many other places. The location is older. You know, before this tower, this church was built, it was an old pagan center of worship. But that's another story. For me, still, okay, I feel this power of religion and who, but I also see the beauty and the beauty of artwork and you realize there were so many people working on this, and as a matter of fact, I doubt that we could build this today. Of course, we have machines that they didn't have, but I doubt that we would have so many artists who can work with stone, with this material, to create this. I mean, you need thousands of people who can do this, and you hardly will find that many people nowadays. So this is with the buildings. Yeah. And when we look at these buildings, we also have to realize that It was simple people who started building this stuff. Nearly in every city you have a cathedral. So if it's not a cathedral, if you have not a bishop in this place, still you have great churches, and that's only one thing. And the difference between Gothic style and the former Romanic style, it's amazing. This is also a technical approach, a technical process, so to say. We think always, hey, medieval, they were all kind of dumb and stupid, but I mean, it was a time of invention. And this is what you can also see in architecture. It was amazing inventions done there. Now, this is a picture that wants to prove that, because it's like nowadays as well, or it wasn't all times like that. If we have a great project, of course, we learn in this project. This project sets free some energy. I mean, if it was like in ancient times, when people built great temples or stuff like the pyramids, of course, they learned something while doing it. Or you just to take something really modern, I mean, this entire project of inventing the nuclear bomb at the end of Second World War. I mean, this was such a big project. There were so many people working on it. Of course, besides the main project, there were many new inventions. Many stuff came, by example, working with computers and all this, you know, all this stuff. So what I want to say is, when people unite and work together on great projects, this is a force of invention itself, and the entire medieval time was a time of invention in handworks and in arts, and it was not a stable thing. It was developing all the time. For 300 years, it was just rising and getting a process of learning. That's what I'm talking about. Now, of course, we don't only have churches, churches and cathedrals. Of course, they are the first that jump in our eye, because they are meant to do exactly that. I mean, they are built with a high tower, so you can see them from all over. It's also a way of saying, hey, here is our representation, here's our rulership. Same goes for castles and fortresses. And of course, when people come to Germany, to Central Europe, to old Europe, of course, that's also what many people are fascinated, all these castles, and of course, many are not medieval, but in medieval times, this was also one of the things, constructing castles, and this is also has to do with a rulership. As a matter of fact, in German, we call these fortresses Burg. You can hear that in city names like Hamburg. It's Burg, it's a Burg. And Burg is very, in the language, in etymology, it's very closely linked to the word Berg. Burg and Berg. Berg in German is then the mountain. Because you build your Burgs, your fortresses, you build them on top. Not only because it was then difficult for some enemies to get it, but also to show this representation. Hey, from far away you can see here's the ruler. You know, this has also to do with it. Yeah, but inventions in technology in constructing, it's not only the high representative buildings, but it's also the entire infrastructure. And if you walk through Europe, through old Europe with open eyes, it's amazing how much infrastructure we still have that is coming out of this age. Now, best example would be, if we talk about Germany here today, would be this here. This is the so-called stone bridge over the river Danube in Regensburg in Bavaria. This is the oldest bridge in Germany that is still intact. This is 12th century work, high medieval times. And even nowadays, the last time I was in Regensburg, there was still the electrical trains running on top of the bridge. So this bridge is still, you know, it's not like a museum, or you don't touch it because it might crumble. No, I mean, there's still the trains, electrical train and traffic is running over this. This is still part of the infrastructure of the city. And this is an amazing building. I mean, the river Danube is you know, in winter you have ice sometimes. So you have ice crushing against the bridge. You have high waters and all that. Over more than 800 years, this bridge was not destroyed. Of course, you have to take care of it. As with every building, you have to take care of it. But I mean, just think, these people were constructing things that we still use today. I mean, if we compare this with our modern architecture, which is also impressive in height and stuff, everything that you can do with steel and things, amazing. But I think I don't tell you any news that a lot of our modern infrastructure, only after 40 years, this concrete material, it's crumbling. It was not that long ago that in Italy, in Genoa, a huge autobahn, freeway, bridge for cars, a big thing was just falling down. nobody saw it happening. And we've got examples of that also from America. Bridges fall apart. I mean, they're only 40, 50 years old. Now, in those times, people built not only for themselves. They built for longer ways. And isn't that amazing? I mean, just that we can still, here in old Europe, we still use this architecture. But we can see this fine art, this know-how of hitting really challenges in architecture, not only in these big things, but also in smaller features. This here, for example, this is a well in one of these fortresses. It's in actually this is in Germany in the Harz. This is the Burg Kyffhäuser. The Kyffhäuser is nearby the Harz. It's in central Germany, and this is also work from 13th century. This is highly medieval work. And this is the deepest well worldwide. That's amazing. I mean, these people, because that's, of course, is a big challenge. You build a fortress on top of a mountain. Well, one of the things is how do you get resources, especially water? You need water. Water for your animals, water for humans. I mean, water you need anywhere. And that was a big challenge. How do you do that? And people were smart. People were creative. And people were able to build something like this. And this was done in a few years only. 3-4 years work, they dug this well. It's the deepest well worldwide. It's this piece is I guess it's 176 meters deep. I mean, what an amazing work! Now, if you wanna start digging a hole at your home, you after a few meters you will see the challenges. It's not that easy. I mean, the walls might fall down, so you need to work with that. At certain points, you get water in. Okay, that's what you're looking for, a well, but you have to go that deep that you have enough water every day. So just a little bit water, that's not enough. So while you dig this hole, you also have to get the water out. which is also a matter of constructing. This is then technology that is also used in mining, which is also in medieval times. This mining was amazing, coming up new technologies, how to do that, how to get the water out, mechanics, all this stuff was discovered by doing it. And that's amazing. I mean, these wells. As a matter of fact, I guess from the three or four deepest wells worldwide are all in Germany from medieval times. This is also just one example of what these people knew, and how creative they were. Talking about wells and water, of course, water is a very important resource for every community living together. Now, this is also a typical, you might say, cliché scene of some small German town. I cannot even tell you what town it is. There's so many that look very similar. You see the, of course, the buildings are not 1,000 years old. There's not very many of these very old buildings in this construction that survive 1,000 years. But it's the same, it's a medieval ensemble, the way this stands, the way it was in medieval times as well. And there's people coming from all over the world, tourists, and they want to see exactly this. It looks like a cliché, but for many people of the New World, from America, wow, this is beautiful. I mean, this is beautiful, because but what makes it so beautiful? It's these small things, people living together. There's a sense of community in this, and always at the center you have something like a well, a public well where people can get water. And also this, you see, it's always with art. This was never only functional, that you just put it there, it's functional. No, it was always, it was a beautiful place. Beauty had was a value in those days, to create something beauty. So people hang out together there. You get your water, but I mean, there you have a little chat with your neighbors, with other people, and you know, this as a matter of fact, this is communal era. And still nowadays it's like that. People sit together here in cafes, and this still has this life quality. It's a sort of city planning, so to say. Well, it's not planned, but it is a city that where communication and feeling well had a value for people. This is very, very important to understand, because that's what medieval times are about. Here another example. Oh no, we move on. Yeah. Now, many of the medieval buildings that we see are not built by some great ruler. This is also a big difference that we need to understand. Now, when we check out worldwide and we see, and I was traveling a lot on this world and saw many places, whenever you see, let's say, great temples, great palaces and stuff, it's always built for some rulers in some very in some very you were doing this under pressure. That's what I want to say. I mean, check out Athens in Greece. Beautiful, you know, beautiful. The harmony of the temples, the Pantheon. Wow, the Acropolis. That's great stuff. I love it. But I mean, how were the people living there? The simple people. I mean, we see the palaces. We see the palaces and we see the great temples built for some gods. But what about the people like you and I? How are they living? What do we see from them? There's nothing left over. Because they were living in very simple conditions, in huts and stuff. Now, the difference in this medieval times was a lot of this infrastructure was built by the people for themselves. This is from a town in northern Germany. It's from Stralsund, and this is the citizen hall, so to say. This was not built for some ruler, but this was built by the people from Stralsund for their own rulership. I mean, when we talk about these cities, these cities had their were self-efficient. They were organizing themselves. Of course, they were part of this bigger Roman German Empire, which had an imperator, but the state was rather small compared to nowadays. taxes were rather very small compared to nowadays. As a matter of fact, in most of these cities, the people organize themselves. They organize themselves, and then they might even have associations with other cities. Just one little point that I want to mention here is the Hanse. I don't know if you have ever heard about that. It's, as a matter of fact, the Hanse is an association of free towns, a trade association. Towns, they are still called Hanse towns. They were most in the northern area of Germany, and it's about the Baltic Sea. That was the main trade field of the Hanse. So these Hanse cities, they developed like a net where they were all connected. And this was a big area. The most northeastern city of the Hanse was Novgorod, and you already hear the name. This is Russian. You know, this is at the very, very end of the Baltic Sea. And that was one outpost, and then all these Hanse towns were dealing, and most in the west it was on the British Isles in London and even in the north of England. So there was one big association of trade, and this was in a good way of trade. I mean, I know nowadays we live in this capitalist times, and very often we're suspicious when it's only about the money and stuff. But of course, trade is a positive value. It's a good thing when people share things. Can you use it? Can we change? Can we deal something? Can we trade something? And a fair trade that's coming from eye to eye with a handshake. Interesting, in German language, the word for trade is Handel. Handel, Handel. You know, that's fair trade. And if we have a trade like this, this is great. This is nothing to do with capitalism and robbing stuff from people, but this is trade is always helpful to create. Everybody can benefit from good trade if trade is running. But this is trade that was not organized by the state. This is the trade that these associations that were built by the own people, and of course this was leading to prosperity in all of these Hanse towns, and also in this medieval times, these 300 years, I tell you, these Hanse towns, they got rich, amazingly rich. People got rich. And with this money, they built stuff like this. And also there, hey, we built a town hall, but we want to make it beautiful. Because we also want to make it for a higher good, for a higher ideal. And of course, they were also in some rivalry. Hey, did you see the town hall in Stralsund? Hey, we also make one. So this was, but this is okay. You know, it was a rise in prosperity. That's what we can really say. And this is an impression of it. So this was not built for any great ruler by force. Hey, you have to labor for me. But this was built by the people. Now at this point, I want to make one thing clear. There's a big difference in these medieval times between life in the cities and on the countryside. All the things that I'm talking about is I have the focus on the cities, the medieval cities here in the German lands. And of course on the countryside things were quite different. I mean, you were peasants, you were unfree, but you had to work for a landlord. You could not decide freely where to go or what to do, what kind of work. You had to work for him and all that stuff. But in medieval times, there was this rule, it was like a golden rule, that everybody could come into the city. And when you lived within the city walls for 1 year, and you didn't mess up things, you didn't turn criminal and something, yeah? if you lived for 1 year within the walls of the city, you were guaranteed the right of citizenship. And that means you were a free man then. Stadtluft macht frei. City air makes free. That was a word that was spoken a lot in medieval times. So you had the chance to get away from your landlord, hit the next city, and if you're there after 1 year, you're free. And then you can, if you have a talent, you can create something. You can learn from your talent, learn a job, and you, not for everybody, of course, it was possible, but there was a chance of making your life. Of maybe even becoming rich, or your children can become rich and prosperous just by living in the city. So there's a big difference between city and country. That's important. Here, one more of these citizen buildings. This is from Lübeck, also north of Germany, also a Hanse town, and that's amazing. I mean, most Germans know this because actually this is the Holsten Tor, and this was part of the 50 Deutschmark bill. It was this building on. Yeah, and what we see there, I mean, see the richness of it. This was all built in the town for town people. No ruler, no pope or something. Even the churches. I know the churches are of course built for God, but not for the bishop. Not by force or by pushing people. Hey, you have to work, build up this thing. No, but people were Christians, and it was they were really pious people, and they did it in just as a service for something higher. Not for some worldly leader, but for God. Hey, we the people of Lübeck, we want to build this great church. That was the way of thinking that these people had, and of course many worldly things. I mean, you see all these beautiful buildings, and there's so many of them. There's in so many cities, even nowadays in Germany. You know, this country was torn apart by so many wars, and of course so much stuff was lost. But still, we have so much that is left over, which is proof of a prosperous time, of a rich time, and of a time of citizenship. That's the most important thing on this point. And there's so many other things that we have a total wrong thinking of medieval people. These are medieval pictures that show the bathhouses. Now we always think, or that's the way we are taught, well, medieval, you know, it was all dirt, there was no hygiene problems, you know, people didn't wash themselves and died young because they were all sick. That's not true. This is totally untrue. As a matter of fact, the Gothic human was much more aware of purifying the body. In every city, you had these public bathing houses. They were public, and you had these bathing houses, there were many of them, and they were open for very simple people, also for beggars. Because in a medieval city, in a medieval town, everybody had his place. I mean, even the beggars, of course there was beggars, they didn't starve or something. That did not happen. I mean, we didn't have any, in those times, they didn't have any social welfare or stuff like that. It was not organized by some state that costs a lot of money and bureaucracy. They didn't have that. And so when you were not able to make your living with your work because you were unhealthy, you had an accident, you were lame, you were sick, you were maybe just too old, there was no social welfare joining in. You couldn't make a living out of your work. Okay, then you were a beggar. But the beggars of the city, they had also their place, and there was bathhouses just for beggars. There was when rich people had their nice and beautiful big homes. Sometimes in some cities, at some times it was the use that also in these big houses at the lower etage, you had some beggars living there. They were not freezing to death at winter time. They were not starving. They were holding together. Now this is also because in medieval times, people really had still this heartful contact with each other. This is our city, and you cannot be an honorable citizen if you in the shadow of your house there's somebody starving. This is not, you know, then you lose your honor. So people took care. Yeah, it was also when they had big festivities, like when some higher family, we call it the patrizia, the patricians, the wealthy merchants families, when for example when somebody of this merchant family is marrying, then there was a public holiday, and that was maybe going for a week. And that public celebration, that meant that, well, if you want to be an honorable man, you make a celebration for all the people of the city. They even the beggars, then they got some great food on the table and wines and amusements. It was not done in only in some nice place and behind big walls and you keep the peasants out. No, the simple people could also participate. It was always a community in the cities. This is what we really have to understand. It was still, of course, there was rich people and there was poor people. And of course, it was not everything free. I don't want to romanticize this and say, oh, this was the greatest time and you know, you could all go back. Of course, they had also their problems. Rules, you could not do whatever you want, that's for sure. But it was a community. The cities, the medieval town was a community that was working together. And even these harsh social problems, they didn't have that. This is our projection that we think, oh, medieval times, they were just suffering, you know, and you had to work until you die and all that. As a matter of fact, these phenomena, they all came later. This came after medieval times. You know, medieval times, just a little school learning here, it's called medieval in German, Mittelalter, Mittel, Medium, Medi, it's in between something. And to make it very simple, the antiquity, you know, old Romans, Greece, Egypt, this is one point, and this is the modern times where we are. And in between, they call it the Mittelalter, Medi. But the medieval times, they stop, or the end of the medieval times is defined by, well, one thing is the fall of Constantinople. It was 1452 or something. Then the journeys from Columbus to the Americas, 1492. And then also the last major event would be the Reformation, Martin Luther then. Now this is the end of the medieval ages, and that's the start of the modern times. So when we talk about modern times, we're not talking about 20th century. We talk about around 1500, 1450, 1500. That's when the modern times began. And actually many of these negative habits that we had in some centuries are in that time. It was in modern times that the clerics, the aristocracy in some countries turned so decadent that they never washed at all. You know, in medieval times people were purifying their body, but there's other times where they only took powder on for decades, not touching water. It was in modern times that you had, for example, the witch hunts, this major witch hunting. This was not medieval times. In medieval times, there were no witch hunts. I mean, there might be single cases of harsh punishments and stuff, and also, of course, in some Christian sense. That's true. But this massive, I would even say systematic hunting down of what they call witches, which is in the end just female knowledge, traditional knowledge, knowledge about traditional healing, about sexuality also, population control, that you don't get pregnant as a woman every time you make love with your man. All this stuff, this was hunted away within this witchcraft hunt. But this was in modern times, you know, this was not medieval times. Also in the countryside, when we hear that the peasants, the farming people, they were so much under pressure that they had to work all the time and everything was taken away from them. This was also not medieval times. This was modern times. It was in the times of like Martin Luther, when in Germany in the countryside the peasants arise and rebelled just because their way of living was no more possible. In medieval times, okay, land was living on the land was not free, but there was not these horrible social conditions that we got later on. There's even in great years, of course, when you live on the country, you're always dependent on the climate. You might have a bad year with a bad harvest, and that's gonna hit you hard. But in many times, we have even reports that. This prosperity of this high medieval times was even spreading out to the country. And we have reports of farmers having gold buttons when on Sunday they went to church. You know, even this was happening. Yeah, so part of this prosperity also got them to the land. These really disturbing, I would even say, conditions we had then in modern times. That's a big difference. Yeah? Medieval times it was not like that. People were pure, were living a pure and clean life. They also had a different relationship to their own body. While nowadays, or then in modern times, I mean, we have a strange relationship to our body. In those days, people didn't feel ashamed of their nakedness, for example, the nakedness of the body. This was no problem for them. In these bathhouses, there was men and women together. And don't get me wrong. I mean, they did not hold any orgies or something. In those times, they had a very high values of moral, and there was no wild sex parties going on. This not at all. But it was just this natural. Dealing with the body, with the needs of the body, sexuality as well as eating, also getting old, getting ugly, the ugly body, that was no problem for them. We see that in the next picture, for example. This is already the end of this time. It's the 15th century. This is from Albrecht Dürer, one of the most famous artists of that time. And I mean, just look at the way he was painting the bodies. That doesn't look like a sex symbol, doesn't it? But that was not the problem, because this has nothing to do with pornographics or something. You know, this was just a straight look at human life, at the human body that has certain needs. Also, sexuality is one need of the body, and they were having they were accepting this. This is what I want to say. And not suppressing the body all the time. And this was just a sort of a natural coming together. As a matter of fact, there are reports that at one time, it was also at the time of Albrecht Dürer, this report comes from Albrecht Dürer that I tell you now. Albrecht Dürer said, because he was a painter, he was always interested also in the body, to paint the body and anatomy and stuff. And he said that in Antwerpen, which is a town in modern Belgium, when the emperor Karl, I can't remember which Karl, so many of them, but when the emperor of the Holy German Empire, when he visited Antwerpen, there was a big festival in honor for this important person to come, and of course they had many flowers there, you know, they make the city look nice. And they also had, this is reported by Dürer himself, they also had young naked women there. You know, young naked women with maybe some flowers in their hair and maybe some green, some plants. And they were standing there to welcome the emperor. And you can be sure this was not, this has nothing to do with pornographics, because hey, this would be a great insult against this emperor if you would bring into scenes that are morally not correct. This was not pornography. This was just an honor. Look, this is beauty, and the emperor comes and we show him beauty. We want to. This is what I want to say, and this is also how Dürer as an artist saw these things. Hey, this is just a beauty, a young body, and well, sometimes you can also paint an old body, you know. So people were very much straighter, I would say. They were not so mentally deranged that we have now. We have so much complexity in the relationship to our body, to our sexuality, to our agriculture. I mean, we are disconnected. In one word, we're disconnected. Well, so many of us, modern man, I might say, modern man is disconnected from nature, disconnected also from his body, and this was in those times different. That's what I wanna point to. Now, another thing that is really amazing is if we realize that all these achievements of building of arts, of cities, this was made by very, very little populations. This is what we really really need to understand, that in those days, these cities were small. These cities were small, and I've got the numbers in this book, and I will show you this book right away. But let me tell you about these numbers first, just to get a feeling what great achievements people had in these times. Now, it says that there was in Germany, there was only about 15 cities with more than 1,000 inhabitants. Whoa, I mean 1,000, that would not define a city nowadays. I mean, this is really small. But let me tell you, a city or a town is not, in those days, not defined by size. It's defined by law. It's about these city rights that I was telling you. Once you're in the city, it is different from the countryside. It's this self-organization and stuff. So it's an urban concept. It's something to do with the status, not with the size. And in those days, there were not many big cities. It was small. It says Cologne, by example, was the biggest town. It had 30,000 inhabitants. Lübeck, with the Holstentor I showed you before, had in 14th century 25,000 inhabitants. Augsburg, Nuremberg, they had in the 15th century not more than 18 to 20,000 inhabitants. That's not much. That's very little. Frankfurt am Main 9,000, Mainz 6,000. Now, of course, maybe the count is different than we have it now. Maybe they counted only the male population and not the children and not the women. Maybe like that. But, so maybe you might add a little bit up to it. But still, what we realize is this is amazing small populations. And now check in that every one of these cities has so many great projects. The dome from Cologne, I mean, what a big building. In Chartres, that I showed you before, Chartres, this is, even nowadays, when you visit Chartres, you're amazed. There's this huge church, and the city is, you know, it's small. I guess if you take every inhabitant of the city, you even get the church full. So this makes it even more amazing that all these projects, all this inventions, they were done by very, very little populations. That also tells us a lot about their mindset, how courageous they were. Hey, let's build something big. Think big. You know, that's what we say nowadays. Think big. But see what problems we have. Like when I talk about Germany, oh man, nowadays we're in Germany, in Berlin, our biggest city, they are building on the new airport since decades already. You know, and then in the end it's just an airport. And it doesn't get finished. And it costs so much, you know, so many resources are sucked up. Hey, in those days, only little people were doing big projects. And they do it in every cities. That's amazing. I mean, that tells a lot about this time where people looked forward, you know, people were courageous and had the will to start big projects. Not for the king, not by force, because they were forced and as labor slaves or something, you know, with a whip, you build this pyramid now. No, they were doing it because it was their city and they wanted to have it beautiful. That's amazing. And this is really what we have to keep in mind. Also at this time, it's many, many new cities were just built, new cities. At this time, Germany, or the German lands, it's difficult to speak of Germany because it has not so much to do with this national construct that we have in modern times. So I like to say the German countries, because it's a plural. The German countries, they were expanding towards the east. What is nowadays Poland and stuff, that was step by step, it was conquered by the Teutonic Knights. In that time, there was living Slavic pagan people. So it has, had to do with missionizing and bringing Christianity. But also lots of this country was wild. There were some tribal people living there, but it was wild. And in this time, in these 300 years that I talk about, it was more than 1,000 new cities were started. Out of nothing, you know, where nothing was there. And actually, I live in one of those cities, where in the city where I live here in the eastern part of Germany, this city was founded in 12th century. There was nothing there before. Maybe much older, of course. There was people living, but there was no urban structure. You know, nothing like that. So very often these cities were built straight from the new. Often they started with a monastery. That's also one point we could talk much more about, the monasteries that are amazingly intelligent and efficient communities that spread handwork and the gardening and all that. They were making the land ready for settlement. They were the pioneers, so to say, in American sense. They were pioneers. So that was very often was monasteries. Often it was also a fortress or something. Then something came around. But it was amazing how many new cities were built, and then they were growing. That's amazing. Now, there's one thing that I really want to focus on now, and this has also to do with this book here, because we need to ask, how was that possible? If we compare it to our days, how was it possible that you have a 3 centuries running period of growth, with none economical crisis, nothing like that? It was just growth. And everybody who was living in this time could participate. You know, you were a craftsman, you're doing handwork, you had never a problem selling your stuff. There was always, it was as much as you did, you could sell it all. That was going on for 300 years. Never a decline, never panic or something that, you know, a crisis in that way. They didn't have that. Why? Why? That's what we should ask ourselves, isn't it? And now it comes in here, this book that I want to show you. Actually, it's a German book. It's by a German author. His name is Karl Walker. And the book is called Geld in der Geschichte. This is a book, it was published in the 1950s, so it's not that old, but already a little bit. And I'm very happy that there's also a English translation nowadays available, but only on ebook, on Kindle. It's this one. Karl Walker, you might say, Karl Walker, Money in History. Check out if you can find this on Kindle. I was checking it in preparation of this episode, and I saw that on Amazon, not one review yet on this. So I guess it's not I'm very well known in the English-speaking world, but I tell you, check out this book. It's really a good read. And now, Money in History. Of course, this book goes about the ancient times and stuff, but in the main focus is the medieval era. And this guy he also asks himself, how could that be possible that in these 300 years it was just growth, no crisis? How can that be? And the central thing that this guy analyzed, and I'm totally with him, is the economy of the Brachttheaters. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, people. Brachttheater, Brachttheat. It's spelled B-R-A-C-E-A-T. And that way you can find it also in English. And the Brachttheater, it's a money system. This is a Brachttheater. So it's a sort of a coin, but it's not a real coin. A Brachttheater is a very thin thin metal. Of course, silver or gold, but very thin. Not like a coin. A coin is thicker, and a coin is printed on both sides. The Brachttheater not. It was very thin, and you have only one stamp on it. And so you might say it's a primitive coin. It's a cheap way to make coins. It's a simple way to make coins. Making real coins is much more complicated and takes a little bit more. So that's probably the reason why you think, these Brachttheaters, this is primitive. But there was something special about this money. And this is a Brachttheater from Magdeburg, by the way. Magdeburg, also not too far away from here, with the Bishop Wichmann. This was one of the most amazing figures in this Brachttheater economy. And what was the secret there? Well, these Bragdaerts, I told you, they don't last long. You can even break it into two pieces, you know, it's gold. Hey, we break this one half for you or for me or something like that. So from time to time, they had to make new ones because it didn't last that long, like a coin that might last 100 years or something, or even longer. Yeah? And in regular terms, and it was not much time, they called in all the money. Like in Magdeburg, it was at some phase, it was twice a year. At some certain holidays, or also at other situations, there's a new ruler coming, some news from the crusade or whatever. From time to time, and was not long time intervals in between, they called for new money. This is called the renovatio monetarum in Latin, the new money, making the money new again. And what was the deal? Well, you had to bring in your Bragdaerts to the authority who were making the money. And by the way, making money, creating really coins and Bragdaerts, this was a privilege. And this was not everybody could do that, of course. But when you had to bring your money back to get the new coins, now comes the clue. Check this one. Huh? You bring, let's say, I bring my old money to the minting station, and I bring 10 Bragdaerts. I get 8 new ones back. So I don't get as many back as I bring there. Now that sounds at first hand, that sounds not nice, does it? But what this is a negative interest rate. Now this is the clue, it's a negative interest rate. By this renovatio monetarum is a negative interest rate. So you bring your money and you get less back. What do you do then? Well, you spend your money. That's what you do. In these times, there was no need in collecting your money and, you know, in some box and I get richer and richer. This treasure building is the opposite. In this time, there was no use in treasure building because in those days, the gold and the silver and the precious metals, they were floating all the time. They were floating because nobody would like to hold it too much on them because, hey, you don't know, next time renovatio monetarum, hey, you get less of it. So invest it. Build a nice palace, build a new well, build something for your community. Hey, give some money for the construction of the church. This was what was driving the economy there. A negative interest rate, this Bragdaerten money. And they were changing it and all the time. So nobody kept his gold at home. There was no banks amounting gold pieces. And of course, this Bragdaerten rulership, it was not all over Europe or even Germany. It was not all everywhere the same. It was flowering the most if you would look at Germany in the northern and eastern parts. But that's where we have the Hanse then and this. While the southern and western parts had more connections to the Roman world, so to say. But especially in this new coming land, where new cities was built, this is where this Bragdaerten economy was running so well. And this was just pushing economy and it's growing. Now this also might give us a hint how this golden age, so to say, was about to vanish. And yeah, we can talk about that already now because time is running. There's so much I want to say to you, man. But this is also important. How did that all come to an end? I see two things. One is the Black Death, the plague, the Black Death. And I guess for us, it's hard to understand what a big impact the Black Death had on the psyche of the people. With the Black Death, I mean, in parts of Europe and in Germany, there was regions where two-thirds of the people were dying. Two-thirds. I tell you, we modern people, even in Germany, we have so many wars, but not First World War, not Second World War, was even getting close to losing two-thirds of the population. I mean, wow. We cannot... We really, we cannot understand how it feels to live in a time where people are just dying everywhere. So this was a big, big impact on the psyche of the Gothic man, and it was changing him forever. And after this plague time, Black Death time, people were much more in this mindset of the sinner. You know, God was punishing us because we didn't live right. So all of a sudden, you know, the man was guiding the swords to himself. We are the bad guys. We have done something wrong. We got punishment. While before, I showed you, the Gothic man was living an innocent life. You know, it was living well, having a good time. Also, they didn't, bring it in here now, in the Gothic times, people didn't have to work as much as we do now. That's also, we think that they worked themselves to death, but that's not true. In the Gothic times, you know, people had much more holidays, all the church holidays. Every week was some holiday. They didn't work like all the time. I mean, of course, obviously they didn't have any vacation and jumping in an airplane and taking some day off at a beach. Of course, that was not possible. But there was a fixed circle of life, of the year, and there were so many holidays. Church holidays, holidays because somebody married, some family stuff, and people didn't have to work that hard. People also, today we think they didn't get paid well, but I told you, this prosperity was spreading, and even simple people could afford a lifestyle that is unrealistic for many of us now. We know that also from what people ate. That, as a matter of fact, for somebody who was working, building like some of these churches, a mason, these guys had only one day in the week where they didn't eat meat. That was the Friday. That was fasting day. On the other days, I mean, and this was simple people. They had a full table every day, you know. This was what we have a totally wrong a picture of that. But then, when this Black Death came, it was such an impact on the psyche, and man somehow lost this innocence, this easy feeling, this enjoying life, this living life in the moment, and this was what got totally shattered, and this was one of the main reasons how this golden era, so to say, ended. And hand in hand with this came also the rising of the Lombard bankers, the bankers of Venice, and they were also expanding then towards Central Europe, so to say, Germany, and they were bringing their new economy, and they said, come on, this Praktia, this is primitive stuff, you know, we have got some better, we make the mint the gold coins, but then of course when the Praktia was gone, so was also the need for this renovatio monetarum. It still was was done also with real coins, but it got less and less. Then you do it only every 10 years, and after a while this got just finished, and then it didn't have any more this driving engine of this medieval economy. It was just passed away. So it was the plague of the death of the Black Death, and also the rising bankers coming from northern Italy, Venice, and that's a story. Well, we could look also all evening long, and we might do it. Story of Venice, very interesting. Venice and the oligarchy. There's also good information out there if you're interested in that. So this kind of mindset came and also ended just this medieval times. Of course, there was also then by these Columbus journeys. I mean, the entire world changed, and that was the end of this Praktiaten economy. But the idea is, okay, I mean, nowadays, I know we're not going back. This will not be our new money, obviously. But the idea of a negative interest rate, that's what is amazing. And that's what we might consider today as well. I know nowadays, you know, the rulership, they always tell us, TINA, the TINA formula, there is no alternative, TINA. That's what they tell us all the time. But hey, of course there's an alternative. People were living there. You know, they were not in any white people. These were living in urban. These were creating urban lifestyles. Of course, it is possible. And this is what I also at the very beginning I already told you that In my eyes, this is a female principle of economy, this negative interest rate. It's spreading things. The opposite thing is you collect it all, like it was in the times before and also in the times after. You collect your treasure. You don't want to give away your gold. This goes for the single being as well as for states, mercantilism and protecting your markets. And even nowadays, this is politics, you know. But the idea is gold and silver, it's creating prosperity when it's floating, when it's free. Then this is a different mindset, and I really see it that way, and you might see it different, of course, but for me this is an expression of an inner mindset, and the female principle is abundance, is sharing, is get it out, while in this case the male principle is getting it for yourself and being always in rivalry with somebody else. Then it's something that is not enough of, especially when you have then the interest rate that is always forcing us to gain new stuff, because it's not enough. This is a mental set. We don't have enough. There's not enough of this energy. So you have to be fighting, or you have to be more smart, or you have to even fool the other people to get your own share. While if you live in an economy where sharing is the thing, there's no need into getting these mindsets. You know, you're selling your stuff, and your neighbor who's doing maybe similar things sells his stuff, and in the evening you're together and have a good time, have a good Feierabend, as we call it. You know, when the work is done in German, we call it Feierabend. Fire is like a party. Yeah? That's when the work is done, then we have a good time. Yeah. There was no rivalry in that way. That all started then in this change of the system. And then it got rapidly. Then, you know, the decline was so amazing. I showed you these examples of buildings that were not able to fulfill them anymore. Then they were protecting themselves. You were protecting your work from your neighbor. Your city was protecting their market from the others. Because all of a sudden, gold and silver became rare, because then it's accumulating. That's what also Karl Marx then says, it accumulates. But only in this interest, with this interest rate, in this economy, only growth. 300 years, no crisis, only growth, 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 growth. Well, I guess we can learn something from the medieval times, can't we? Maybe, I would say maybe, I'm sure that is that way. These medieval people, the Gothic people, they were not primitive. They were not something that we look down on them and, hey, how good have we it? Those were the Dark Ages. Maybe it's different. Maybe we should wake up. Hey, we can learn from them. And of course, when we realized that it was only so few people making great things, it was only, they had simple technology. Of course they didn't have the technological possibilities that we have. Now guess if we could come into a similar mindset like those people, what we could do nowadays with the possibilities that we have, technological, in communication, training, we could have something like the Hanse worldwide. But then this is something different than First World War, plundering stuff out of Third World. The Hanse was an association of free cities, of free citizens, eye and eye. And this is fair trade. This is not like the British Empire, just to name one, which is an empire of the oligarchy that was just plundering other countries. You know, this is not with the Hanse. The Hanse is trade eye and eye. I mean, I guess nowadays with our modern world, with our possibilities, if we can get this spirit in our world now, wow! Can you imagine the prosperity? I mean, if even in medieval times, where so many things were limited in resources, in technologies, limited population, know-how, all this, and but if you compare that, I mean, can you imagine what prosperity we could reach today? And I'm not talking about just a few that are piling up the gold, but I mean prosperity. Gold is nothing that you eat. Gold needs to float. And then we can share all these great things that we have and much, much more. I mean, I tell you seriously, this is not a dream. This is not some freaky hippie illusion. No, this is, look at this. This is real stuff. And I'm convinced, I'm sure, we can have a different lifestyle here on Earth. There is an alternative. And if you're like me, I mean, maybe you have the fantasy to get, wow, what prosperity we could have for all human beings, even for the poorer ones. Of course, this, I'm not talking about some communism that everything is the same. Of course, you might have rich people, you might have people who are even more clever or more talented and stuff, but it would be a rise of prosperity for all. Because that's also another thing that we can learn from medieval people. They saw the unity of things. They were not splattered into egos, or I have to fight for my own to get me and my people through. And they were seeing the whole thing, especially in these cities, which were real communities where people worked together. Everybody had his place, and that's how they even started these big projects. Now that's what we can seriously learn from them. So, towards the end, I just wanna show some of these scenes. As I told you before, there's in so many places in Germany you might see this. Even if so much was destroyed by centuries, all these wars and stuff, but we still see this. And people coming from all the world to places like this, to places like Marburg or Rothenburg ob der Tauber. You see people from America, you see people from Asia, and for all of them, they come there and they have this feeling, oh, that's nice, oh, that's cute. What does that say? It's nice, it's cute, it feels cute. It feels nice to live in there. Guess you would live in there. You know, here you would live, here you would also work. I mean, in those times, these cities, they were functional, you know. They might look like a mess if you compare it with cities in America. They were all planned, you know. I mean, okay, here we build a city and we make it like a chessboard, you know. We organize it. Those cities were they look like a mess. It's like when you look into a beehive or some ants or stuff. You might see a mess, but there's an order in it because it's organically grown. And in those times, I mean, you know, the people who had a certain job, they were living in the same neighborhood. There was no long work way to go to work. I mean, where you live is where you work. With these neighbors, they are all their life the same people. They're doing the same work. I mean, we learn a little bit from each other. They have the festivals together and all of this. So everybody had his space. And I mean, this is small and cute and nice, but just next to it might be, wow, one of these big cathedrals. Also, the cathedral is in the city, it's part of their community. And it's not something outside the city, oh, this is where the palace of the emperor is and we are here. No, this is their city. And this is just a proof of that even now, the modern people from all over the world. This is nothing to do if you're European. I mean, we have tourists coming from Japan and China, to Germany or France or Italy and seeing this and wow, that's beautiful and making photos and how cute, because it's just this vibration of a scene like this. This is comfortable. You might have a seat here, have a chat with these people, you know, a well in the center. That's a quality of living that they had in these cities. Here another scene, I mean, just look at that. Yeah, and it looks cute, huh? So this is not big skyscraper life, but hey, this is feeling good in an environment like that. You feel like at home. As a matter of, here is a German term I might throw in there. One of these strange words, I guess we have only in Germany. It's called Gemütlichkeit. Ah, what a hell of a term to pronounce for you. Gemütlichkeit. And that means, I can only describe it, that it means having a surrounding where you can have the right mood, where you can feel very comfortable, an atmosphere where everything is fine and relaxed and you're together. Gemütlichkeit is always, it's always social thing also. Gemütlichkeit is with people together. You know, have a drink, have a chat, you know, That's this feeling. This is where you can have Gemütlichkeit. Now compare this to modern social welfare buildings where people live. This is a higher quality here. Yeah, and so much more I would have to say, but looking at the time, we need to come to an end. Check out this book, Carl Walker. Get it on Kindle. And you will get an amazing read in English. I guarantee you that. I mean, I've not read the translation, but I guess it's good. It's officially, you can get it on Kindle, the ebook from Carl Walker. And this is really opening up a lot of new horizons. So this is not only a history book. This is also not only an economy book about money. This is money in history. And if you understand this, you can much more understand where we are right now. So I guess for many of you out there who are working on this stuff, working on economy and alternative economy models, get this book, Carl Walker, History of Money. It's in English, Geld in der Geschichte in German. Get this. It's interesting stuff. It's worth a read, I tell you. And I want to finish also with... Well, I cannot give you a direct quote from it because I would have instantly to translate that into English, and that's impossible for me because it's good work. It's also a good language, you know. This is nice, but at this point, he quotes the chronist von Dinkelsbühl. Dinkelsbühl is also one of these small cities in Germany that are still synonymous for beautiful medieval city, Dinkelsbühl. And he's quoting the chronist that was somebody who was writing the history of Dinkelsbühl. And this is old stuff. So this is somebody from medieval times. And in those days, these people knew that they were living in a good time. Because he saw sort of, it's a free translation. This chronist from Dinkelsbühl, he wrote, at the end of his work, he wrote, I believe to have proven that in these communities, as well as in the 60 other German Reichsstädte, I don't even know how to say that, but in these other German cities, I think I have proven that at least once we reached a sort of optimum in humanity. Wow. I mean, this is what they were feeling in their time, before the plague came, before the interest money came. It was a golden age. Of course, there was also some negative things, and okay, today I was focusing more on this point. We could also see other things, but I'm also sure this is a very special time. Special not only it's in German history or something, but we're talking really about human history. This was a time where human beings could flower. Economy was flowering, technology was flowering, and people had a high quality of living together. And they were not working for life, but they were, or what is it? They were not living for life, but they were working to make a living. They were not caught in this cold, materialistic living that we have right now. Since industrialization, you know, you go to your work, and they had a good time, and this is very special, even in all of human history. And at the core, this man Walker, and I'm totally with him. At the core, he says, it's this economy of the Praktikat, this negative interest. This renovatio monetarum, and this is what we might consider when we're looking for alternatives. So check this out. Thanks a lot for joining us. I hope you stay with us. More to come. Stay with our channel. Spread our channel. We need your support. I mean, we don't have any commercials and stuff. We also do it for something because we believe in humanity. We believe in life. That's why we're doing this work. But of course, we also live in the modern world, and we've got our also our stuff to pay, so we're happy for any support that you can give us, you can give me. And but even if you're just considering these things, if you just spread the information and spread this channel, I'm also very, very happy, and that's great help. So in this sense, I hope you liked our little tour into medieval times. Hope you got some inspiration out of it and learned something new. I got a new look, a new perspective on the things. And in that way, I want to thank you. See you next time. Have a nice time. Bye-bye.